How are agencies successfully utilizing video technology? Go to the Video Teleconferencing Center at federalnewsradio.com, keyword video, sponsored by Tanberg, now a part of Cisco.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and we're going to have an unusually good show today. We're going to kick off a feature that we hope to make a permanent feature of the show, and that is we're going to have weekly visits with people from the Federal Times newspaper. I'm sure you know are familiar with the Federal Times. There's Army, Navy Times, Defense Times, and it's must read for anybody in the business and anybody in the contractor community. And we've got three highly ranked, highly rated Times people in here today. Andrew Tillman with the defense side of the paper. Steve Losey is a reporter for Federal Times, and he covers much of the same things that I do. And Steve Watkins is editor, is sort of in charge of the whole shooting match. So, gents, thanks for being here. Andrew, it would be easier if you change your name to Steve, but we'll go with what we've got. You know, we were talking before the show just to tell the audience about, you know, the ancient Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. And boy, we do live in interesting times. And I don't recall a time on this beat, and I've covered it since, you know, James Buchanan. I don't remember a time when there was so much turmoil and we had things like pay freezes and talking about job cuts like this. Steve Watkins, you want to start off and just talk about your paper this week, by the way, the Federal Times had some great stuff, including you guys had the exclusive on the Postal Service buyout, so we'll get to that too and riffs.
Sure, yeah. Well, very happy to be here and looking forward to these weekly appearances. But you're right. You know, as you know, Mike, us news people in some ways dread the holiday season because there's not a whole lot to report on. But we've had an awful lot of news, and I'm sorry to tell your audience that it's a lot of it is bad for them. We had certainly the pay freeze probably stands out as maybe the biggest news and to many a shock, I think. 2-year pay freeze that was approved by President Obama and the Congress, and that stemmed from the Deficit Commission. Another bit of bad news for federal readers that came out in December with a whole slate of proposals that are likely to, if implemented, are likely to have a big impact on federal employees, and that includes things like cutting the federal workforce by 200,000 people. Cutting pay, the Deficit Commission actually proposed cutting freezing pay 3 years instead of 2, which was what was approved, and a whole other number of various cuts affecting travel, affecting spending, and so forth. We also saw the Defense Department last week announce the second wave of spending cuts. Secretary Gates outlined a number of proposals that Andrew will talk about, totaling something like $78 billion. and then we've got a specter of a government shutdown, which we may see coming up as early as March, April, or May, and that's when the Congress is going to be debating whether to extend the debt ceiling. And it may be that out of that debate, we actually see some increased odds of a possible shutdown. And then, of course, we had this terrible tragedy in Tucson this past weekend, and I'm sure that we'll have some implications from that in the realm of federal security. In addition, as you mentioned, we came out with the issue that came out on Monday, we had some news, one that OPM has been having some problems correctly calculating pensions for federal employees, and obviously that's a huge issue for our audience who are thinking all the time about retirement, when they're going to retire, what's going to happen when they retire, and certainly existing retirees will be concerned by that. And as you mentioned, we posted on the website on Monday news that the Postal Service is planning a new wave of workforce cuts. And they've been doing this for the past couple of years now. But they are planning this fiscal quarter, which ends in March, to announce a new wave of early retirements. And we'll see what happens there. So we don't know yet any details. Postal Service hasn't announced any, but certainly I'm sure it's going to have a lot of get a lot of attention from postal employees.
Well, and anybody feel free to chime in on this. The idea of a government shutdown, and normally, you know, we've been through this before, and it tends to be more often than not a bluff by one political party or the other. And when it does happen, on those rare occasions when it's happened, people have been made whole. And I can't recall a time when the shutdown lasted long enough that people actually didn't get paid. They because the pay cycle is a 2-week lag, it sort of goes on and happens. And what it amounts to is giving you a 3-day vacation in Ocean City if you have the foresight to take it. But this year is different, correct?
That's right. You know, there's one instance last year happened. There was a budgetary showdown involving the Transportation Department and Senator Bunning last March. And about 2,000 Transportation Department employees were sent home, and because they ran out of money. And those guys, I believe, did not get paid. They the House passed a bill that would have made them whole, but it sort of died in the Senate. So if there's a government shutdown, you don't automatically get your money back. It did happen in 1995. Congress did go back and say, "Hey, you guys, this wasn't your fault. You were ready to go to work," and they made them whole. But 1995 is very different from 2011. There's a big concern about deficits. I could see people who are concerned about the deficit saying, "Hey, we just don't, if there is a shutdown, saying we don't have the money to pay feds for work that they didn't do. So, sorry, guys."
I'm sure people will ask, but if there is a shutdown like that, and the government is closed and people don't get paid, what about members of Congress and their staff?
I think they would keep working because they would have to kind of figure out some way to fix this mess.
Yeah. They're vital to the national interest. Yeah.
But I think another, just to piggyback on what Steve just said, another big difference was that in 95, 96, that shutdown derived out of a debate over the appropriations bills. And for the most part, those address discretionary spending. This time around, the debate is going to be about the debt ceiling. And if there is a deadlock there, then that could really affect not only discretionary spending, but entitlement programs as well.
And I guess in order to make their point with your salary money, they might say this is a shutdown period and you're not going to be paid for this. In fact, it's a furlough.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's right. I mean, there's a lot of people who think federal employees should be furloughed. They say, "Hey, a lot of people in the private sector have had their share of unpaid leave because their businesses are having trouble." Last year, Congressman Kaufman introduced a bill that would have sent feds home for 2 weeks in 2011 without pay. It didn't get any traction. It got one co-sponsor, died, you know, almost immediately. So there's not a whole lot of appetite to specifically give feds a furlough, but if it does happen as a side effect of these budgetary battles, feds could not find a whole lot of sympathy.
Right, and they were at. I remember when they were talking about that. They were talking about possibly doing it one day a pay period, so over 10 pay periods or 14 pay periods, something like that. Mm-hmm. But as we know, all the old rules are off. All bets are off. Who would have thought there was going to be a pay freeze? And I want to ask you about that too. Now, the president proposed a 2-year pay freeze, so it would theoretically end January of 2013.
That's right.
The Deficit Reduction Commission, which we need to stress is bipartisan. This is not just a Republican show. This is a bipartisan thing. They wanted it for 3 years. And I'm thinking, given the way things have been going, 2012 obviously is an election year. Might it not be popular to extend the federal pay freeze another year?
It's possible, and we're already seeing some rumblings in that direction. Just last Friday, Congressman Kevin Brady from Texas, he's a Republican from Texas, he introduced a bill that would revive a good chunk of the Deficit Reduction Commission report that didn't survive the supermajority vote required. But we could see a lot of these things revived, and a major plank in his bill would be extending that pay freeze one more year.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem to make sense. It's funny, in the Washington area, you talk to federal workers and they say, a pay cut or a minimal pay raise, they're going to lose votes. Well, maybe inside the Beltway they'll lose votes, but beyond, where most people don't work for the government, federal pay freeze could be a very popular concept.
I think another thing to add is I think one likely prospect could be that the proposals in the deficit commission report, which include the pay freeze, could actually come to life as part of a deal to extend the debt ceiling. So it may end up that we see something on this quite soon in the context of that debate over the debt ceiling extension.
Yeah. Well, Andrew Tillman, you covered defense, and this is, I guess, it's still the largest federal operation, followed by the Postal Service. What's going on that side of the river?
Well, last week, Defense Secretary Robert Gates came out and kind of came out about a month ahead of the rest of the federal budget and kind of seized the upper hand in the debate and announced a long list of budget cuts. And in some ways, it was following up on an initiative that he began last year when he announced some significant cuts in contractor workforce. And, for example, he ended the F-22 fighter project. But this time was a little bit different because he said the White House had ordered about $78 billion in cuts over the next 5 years. And part of his announcement was not just his own efficiency initiatives, as he's called them, but also flat out cuts from the White House. And cuts, the word cuts has seeped into the headlines, but it's a little bit misleading in the sense that these are cuts from previous plans. The defense budget is still going to grow. It's not going to grow at the same rate that Pentagon planners had thought. So in some ways, it's for people inside the Pentagon, for people in the defense world, it's a cut. But in the traditional definition, you're still going to see the defense budget grow to a lesser degree. And I think he has some plans for it to flatten out about 2015.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good semantic point. And we do it in the media, maybe to make headlines, but talk about the Bush tax cuts and extending them. And in fact, they're not cuts. It's a change from what was planned or what was going on, but there's still some growth there.
Right. The Defense Department works on a five-year plan, and this is basically, when we talk about $78 billion in cuts, it's a cut from the previous five-year plans.
Yeah, okay.
And it's really front-loaded in many ways. I mean, they're still going to have roughly a 3% increase next year, and the real cuts are pushed into the out years of that five-year plan. So it's always important to say when you discuss these things that there's a very good chance that this could change, could be rolled back, could be overcome by events. It was a very significant announcement, and it is a lot of money in the defense world, but it's a five-year plan, and Congress gets to meddle in this every year, so you never know how it's going to play out in practice.
And I would add one other thing that's kind of interesting with this round, and that is that we are seeing now some softening. Generally, when the Defense Department comes out and announces a number of cuts, there's a lot of support, and particularly on the Republican side, to fend those back. But we are seeing now, I think, some softening of that kind of reflexive response. And in fact, the bill that Steve just mentioned by Kevin Brady, which would implement a lot of the deficit reduction proposals, it also would include a Defense Department procurement cut of 15%, which I think is pretty noteworthy.
Yeah, the scripts, I guess, have changed, too, with the political landscape, because you now have prominent Democrats from the president on down making cuts in benefits that angered the federal unions and, 2% proposal. Mario Cuomo in New York, Rahm Emanuel in Illinois is talking about major pension reductions, not only of future benefits, but current benefits, as I read it. Same thing in California. And by the same token, the Republicans, who've always been kind of hawkish, are changing their stance, too. So it's hard to keep track of things, isn't it?
Yeah, sure is.
I think there's a recognition from people on both sides that sacred cows are going to have to get gored. I mean, just the financial situation of the country is in such an alarming state, $14 trillion in debt, that we can't do this without cutting defense spending. We can't do this without taking taking a scalpel or hatchet or whatever metaphor you want to use to things like retirement benefits.
Well, and I think Obama's very quick response to implement the two-year pay freeze after the deficit commission report really shocked a lot of people, and mm-hmm. I think that's a telling.
I didn't have time to write the column saying he'd never do it. It would happen so quickly. We need to take a short break here, but we'll be right back on 1500 AM. So stick with us.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Do only dogs hear dog whistles?
You can enjoy multi-car safety feature and good driver discounts when you switch to GEICO. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Are you looking for a smarter, simpler way to save? Now you can get the benefits of paper savings bonds without the paper. It's easy to plan for your financial future with Treasury Direct, a secure, convenient, web-based system where you can purchase electronic savings bonds and other Treasury securities online 24/7. Build your savings by scheduling recurring purchases directly from your paycheck, checking, or savings account. Change how you save today. Visit treasurydirect.gov to open your free account.
What is the mission of the USDA's Food and Nutrition Service? What federal programs seek to reduce hunger while promoting better nutrition? What about innovative approaches to improving nutrition and reducing hunger? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these and other questions with his very special guest, Julie Paradai, administrator of the Food and Nutrition Service within the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I'm Police Officer Sergeant Goodwin. I've been looking into a report of thieves operating in this area. We have now located their hideout, and it's at your local bank. The banks are robbing you blind.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. He's right. If you've got a mortgage, your bank is stealing from you because a typical monthly mortgage payment is 90% or more interest. And over the life of a 30-year mortgage, that can cost you a fortune. It should be illegal. But there's a proven way to eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. To prove it, let me send you a copy of my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-600-1195. Stop getting robbed of your money and future. Get my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-600-1195. For your free copy of my Live Debt-Free CD, call 1-800-600-1195.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. OMB laid out its 25-point plan for improving government IT. Well, the CIO for the Army Contracting Command has actually rolled out some of the tenets of that plan. We'll tap some of their lessons learned. And Apple has said it's looking to get into the enterprise market, even reports that they're really looking to move into government. Well, how do they do that? We'll find out this afternoon on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with three of the top folks from the Federal Times organization, Andrew Tillman, who covers defense, Steve Watkins, who is editor, and Steve Losey, who is a reporter for the Federal Times. And between the three of you here, we sort of cover the waterfront as far as the federal and defense side of government goes. We've been talking earlier about the possible changes that the Congress is looking at, everything from reducing the workforce to the Postal Service, another round of reductions of force or another round of buyouts. The jewel in the crown for so many federal workers is, well, it's really, it's twofold, I guess. It's the health program, the cradle to grave, you know, for life health program, with the government paying the lion's share of the premiums, regardless of your condition, your medical condition, regardless of your situation, you can change at least once a year and get into a different plan, change premiums. And also the retirement program, which whether you're under the CSRS system or the FERS system, is markedly better than anything I've ever heard of in the private sector. And they're talking about changes in both of those areas that would be major pocketbook changes for people. One of the things, and I believe this proposal was in the Deficit Reduction Commission, but I know it comes up every year from the Congressional Research Service of the Congressional Budget Office, and that is to go from the high three system, figuring your annuity on your length of service, your salary, and your highest three-year average salary, and making that instead a high five. High five is a dirty word around Washington. It's not, not the fun thing. How serious is that?
It's hard to say so far. I mean, that was one of the, as you said, proposals in the Deficit Reduction Commission. They didn't get the votes. It's dead for now. But like I said, these things could be revived. It doesn't seem to be part of Congressman Brady's bill that was just revived. So it's not on the queue in the queue just yet. But I would not be surprised if somewhere down the line it got revived as one of these deficit reduction plans.
Well, the Congressional Research Service scored it as I forget how many million dollar savings over the years, which if you turn that around, that means that current federal workers would lose that much in theory in benefits. I got a nice email from Steve at NASA, and he said he had done the homework and that in his case, if he worked another 6 months, if they went from a high three to a high five, he would be made whole or he would not lose anything. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's kind of hard to say. Each person's situation is going to be different. Some people, it's like you said, it's going to be kind of quick for someone like Steve that you mentioned. But for other people, it'll take them a while to be made whole. So everyone's just going to have to sit down and start crunching. If it does become reality, just sit down and start crunching numbers and figure out if the numbers work for them.
But I would add also, I think for those who are near the top grade levels, it probably would not be as big of a hit.
Oh, they're capped.
Because of the caps on the ceilings and the pay compression issue, they cannot go up that much anyway. So I think it would be a little quicker for them to work off that extra 2 years that they'd have to.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm just thinking this. I think this is the biggest freshman class we've had in Congress in forever, you know, particularly in the House, but so many of them. And a lot of these people have come here saying, I mean, you have Senator Rand Paul who's staying with his father. He's living in right. Dad's basement. He's not going to be a permanent resident here. And I heard another one say the other day, if he could get 2 points over, he would resign and go back home and go to work. So these guys are coming in with the sort of the promise that they're not going to be lifers, unlike so many members of Congress.
Well, and a lot of them start that way.
Exactly. They come in for term limits. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, because so many people in Congress have a vested interest not only in the federal retirement system, they have an enhanced version of that, but also in the a health insurance program because they're in it and congressional staffers are in it. But if you have this large number of people who are not going to be lifers, who have their own thing, could this be a change in the way they think and the way they handle these programs?
Could be, perhaps. I suspect that the health program, the federal health program, will be looked at regardless. I think it is going to get a lot of scrutiny. And I don't know how much of a difference that would make in what comes out of it. But I think the deficit reduction report, by the way, I guess I should explain what they proposed. They proposed creating or turning the federal health plan into a bit of an experiment where they would make it what they call a premium support plan, give people essentially a fixed subsidy that they can apply to any plan. And if it works there, then the thought is that they would expand that out to Medicare. I think that obviously scares an awful lot of people. It will, you know, so I can expect a huge cry of opposition from certainly the unions and groups like AARP, perhaps. So, you know, that would be a big political battle. So you know, we'll just have to see what happens. But I don't think that debate is dead, though. And I think, as you say, a lot of people came into this Congress elected aiming to reform a lot of that.
Okay. Short break here. We'll be right back talking to three of the Federal Times top people about anything you want to talk about.
The underlying battle is trying to lay out the framework for how we're going to deliver services over the internet without saturating the backbone, and do it in a way that you don't censor the internet, which is what net neutrality is getting at, but simply try to moderate bandwidth in a way which is fair.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show is sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trossaven, and WTS, Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems.
Nothing is more certain than death and taxes. You've heard that expression. But there's something else you can count on: realizing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Listen to Wayne Zell every Saturday at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will explain how the more you know about taxes, estate planning, and business planning, the better prepared you will be for your journey to wealth and freedom. Listen to Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio, because you can count on more than death and taxes.
Profile America, Wednesday, January 12th. An invention that helped combat disease and provided convenience came on the scene this month in 1908, the paper cup. The idea, developed by Hugh Moore, was to have a one-time-use disposable paper cup. For centuries before, the public drank from the same tin cup or ladle at a well or barrel, sharing their germs. The paper cup took off during the great influenza epidemic of 1918. Soon, the name was changed to the Dixie cup, and was found to be ideal for containing ice cream. Now, special paper cups are used to hold hot coffee at the nation's thousands of gourmet coffee shops. Paper cups are among the $176 billion worth of products produced annually by the U.S. paper industry. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
With the announcement from the Office of Management and Budget on cloud computing as the default approach to IT, the Cloud First policy is expected to reduce the federal government's more than 2,000 data centers by 40%. Join Afcea Bethesda and Dave McClure from GSA for a panel discussion on the Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative and the expanded use of cloud computing with federal IT officers from Energy, State, Interior, and NIST at the Bethesda North Marriott on January 13th. To register today, visit afceabethesda.org/janbreakfast.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Andrew Tillman, Steve Watkins, and Steve Losey of the Federal Times, and we're going to make this a regular feature and sort of go around once a week and talk about whatever is happening. And boy, there is a lot happening now. Got an email from Lynn with the IRS, and she says, I'm getting hit in more ways than one with this. I'm retired military, and I'm building up time in the IRS. I'm nowhere near retirement in the service yet. With changes to TRICARE, freezes in pay, etc., it's sad to see federal workers are being the congressional scapegoats. I'm a single parent, two kids in college. These changes scare me and anger me at the same time. We're all working very hard, and many federal workers are bringing in revenue, which it appears is being lost by those in D.C. What about the TRICARE thing? Because so many federal workers are former military or married to a military person. What is TRICARE?
TRICARE is basically a massive insurance company that provides health care to active duty military, some reservists, a lot of dependents, and an awful lot of retirees. In fact, I think roughly half of the program is not current service members,
retired
but people,
people
who have gained those benefits. And the woman who writes in is a real prime example of a person who might be affected by some of the cuts that Secretary Gates talked about the other day, in that she is sounds like she's a retired military person who's clocked 20 plus years in the service, but is still not 65 years old and is still working in a second job and has not reached Social Security and Medicare age. So she's what they call a working age retiree or a gray area retiree. And the secretary announced some cuts in that area. And I think this was a very telling aspect of the secretary's cuts he announced last week, because before, up until now, last year, the secretary had announced cuts and efficiency efforts that were very hardware driven, some information technology contracts, things that affected people, but did not seem to really zero in on military personnel as much. And he announced some cuts in the TRICARE program that would raise the fees on those working age retirees. And, the argument that Gates and others have put forward is that this is not going to affect the active duty force, but others make the point that you've got probably half a million military retirees who have retired since September 11th. A lot of those people have deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan once or twice, maybe three times. And you've also got people in the career force who are looking at retiring in the next 5 or 6 years, and they would have to really readjust their financial planning if there's going to be significant healthcare benefit cost increases for them as soon as they leave the service.
Right. Okay, good. We've been neglecting the phones here, so we have a caller now. Caller, are you with us?
Yeah, hi.
Where are you calling from, please?
Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a federal employee in a covered position, CSRS employee, and I'm just wondering, is there going to be a government-wide buyout, like for Homeland Security or other agencies or what? I mean, I have to go when I'm 57, and I'd like to go soon, but if there's going to be a buyout, I'll hang out.
I think you just tipped where you worked, by the way. But, now, that's a good question. And the fact is that there's sort of permanent buyout authority out there, and defense has had it for a while, but they seem to be few and far between. Are you guys hearing anything?
It's possible. I hate saying that, but it is hard to say. I mean, the Deficit Reduction Commission proposed a 200,000-person reduction in the federal workforce, and they said the government should offer buyouts to help accomplish that in some cases if they feel necessary. So it could happen. We're just going to have to wait and see. I know that doesn't really help you with your planning, but it's not certain, but it certainly is possible.
And the authority exists now, and if agencies have it if they really want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, and this may be wishful thinking, that several people have mentioned to me, they said, look, if they do this 200,000 job cut, if they do it via attrition, if they only refill two of every three positions, and if they want to keep young people who just joined the government, the ones President Obama said they want to make government cool again, government service cool again, if they want to keep those people and get this going, that would logic the logical thing to do would be to offer selective buyouts.
I think you're exactly right. I think any buyouts that might occur will be extremely selective. It certainly wouldn't be government-wide. And I think with so many people on the verge of retiring anyway, I think it would be foolhardy for a lot of agencies to consider that. I think there's enough people retiring already that I don't think they're going to have to resort to that. Now, there are going to be pockets where that's going to be possibly necessary. And, in fact, the Postal Service, we may see something there. That's one early prospect, I think.
Got it. Well, thank you, caller. Does that take care of you?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, I think that's the most honest answer you're going to get. We just don't know, but they are out there. So thanks for calling. One from Chad here, and he says, if they require federal workers under FERS to pay half of their retirement, could employees opt out of their pension and put that extra money into the TSP or some investment? Would that interfere with receiving health care? Well, to clear up the thing, they're not talking about doubling the amount of money that people contribute to the retirement fund.
No, they're talking about federal employees putting more money into the into the retirement fund.
Right.
But I don't think that you could really opt out of that. I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, that's it's funny though. I've heard had a number of emails from people who said they've heard they're going to double their contributions that the people under FERS or CSRS put in. That's never been a proposal. There is a proposal, I think, to have them increase their contribution rate, but not, it would be a percentage point or two and not doubling, right? I mean, doubling would be 12% for people under CSRS or 13%.
I don't think we're going to see anything like that.
Yeah. I think one of the things you mentioned before the show was the amount that they pay now, and they were talking about doubling their contribution to it, but that's not the same as doubling the amount itself.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Short break. We'll be right back here on 1500 AM.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Tune in Sunday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio. This show features four of the D.C. region's finest business leaders. Through each of these compelling interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, and opportunities that lie ahead. The show inspires, entertains, and is full of wisdom unheard elsewhere. Tune in Sundays at 9 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio.
It's not every day that a Washington Monument celebrates a major milestone, but this year, the University of the District of Columbia is marking its 160th anniversary. Since 1851, they've made academic and professional dreams come true for thousands of ambitious Washingtonians. Join them as they commemorate 160 years of scholarship and achievement with a series of events, starting with a birthday gala January 29th. Learn more at udc.edu/160.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Steve Watkins, Steve Losey, and Andrew Tillman from the Federal Times, and we're going to be making this a regular feature and have various Federal Times persons coming in or calling in, and we're going to do a weekly wrap-up of things. This has been very helpful. I've learned a lot. Security, obviously, it's on people's minds. Joe Davidson in the Post today was pointing out that Social Security offices, which are, you know, out there and they're right in touch with the people, are tightening up security. It's obvious that the IRS has done it now and before. And you had that guy that crashed the airplane into the IRS office in Austin, Texas. I mean, we can go back forever to the Oklahoma City bombings and all that. But federal workers really are on the front lines of this, and political people as well. What are you seeing or what are you hearing about security in government?
Right. Well, obviously, the tragedy in Tucson really has resonated with the public and also with Congress, as you might expect. And I think that's one of the key differences here. And as you say, sadly, this is not the first time that we've come across this issue. What I would expect to see is a lot more collaboration and reliance on local police from the certainly from the congressional districts that are out across the country. I think we'll be seeing that possibly maybe some increases in their budget so that they can arrange some dedicated police presence and protection from the local police forces. I think on the federal side, that's been a long-running problem, and the agency that protects federal buildings, the Federal Protective Service, has been a basket case. We've had many articles about them. GAO has had a number of reports pointing out a lot of security problems with FPS. It's really been in a phase for the last few years of trying to find itself, trying to understand exactly what its role is, what it should be doing. There's a review underway still at DA, Homeland Security Department, trying to decide whether it should be almost entirely relying on contractor security as it is now. Something like 15,000 FPS security officers are contractors. There's only something on the order of 1,200 or so actual feds working at FPS. So I think they're revisiting what should be the future of that. Senator Lieberman is preparing a bill that I don't know much about the details, but I do know it is going to, it does aim to beef up that agency. I think there's a recognition in Congress that it needs some real attention and resources. On the Capitol Police side, you know, that's an agency with 1,700 officers. It is in no way prepared or capable of expanding its jurisdiction beyond Washington, beyond the Capitol area. So I think, as I said before, I think it's really going to be a new equation that includes local police in terms of bringing more security. The marshals has been mentioned as a factor in this, and they are. They protect the courthouses. They protect the federal judges, Supreme Court, and you know, they may also be looking at whether they've got the right mix of resources. There was a federal judge killed in this tragedy. He was not the target, but judges, federal judges, have been complaining for years that they're not getting the security they need, given the kind of threatening environments that they work in.
Right, and you had two Capitol Police officers, one a detective, who were killed in, I think, 1998, protecting then Minority Leader Tom DeLay and Dennis Hastert. That you made me think of something while you're at it. Maybe it always happens in government. We're going two directions here. The Obama administration last year announced that it wanted to bring more jobs back in from the private sector, the inherently governmental jobs, bring them back into government, as the Clinton administration and the Bush administration had taken them out. And they're also talking again about privatizing some Internal Revenue Service collections, which this would be the third iteration of that if they do it. Talk about privatizing the security TSA and have those, because people don't like the screeners, as if the private screeners would somehow be less intrusive or whatnot. And you know, privatizing various things. How's this going to work? You know, going in and out.
Yeah, I think that's just kind of the nature of that debate over insourcing, outsourcing, privatization. It fluctuates with Congress, basically, as generally the. The Democrats tend to carry the water for the federal unions, who are, of course, arguing for more insourcing, arguing against outsourcing, and so forth. We're at a point now where the Republicans, of course, have a stronger role in the leadership of Congress, and not only that, we've got a broader context of spending cuts, and I think we will be seeing a lot more debate over that. I think what's missing is some real solid details in terms of what are the real savings here, and how do we compare the performance of private versus in-house federal employees when it comes to things like security and tax collections and that kind of thing.
I think it's worth noting that it looks like the pendulum on that is within the defense world is swinging back after many years of the privatizing and contractors was definitely the mantra, and a lot of what Gates announced the other day were some very, very significant cutbacks in the contractor workforce, which he's decided is just bloated and unnecessary. I think he's going to cut 10% per year for several years.
Would this mean that some of those contractors would find themselves in government? Not necessarily. Huh?
Well, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think what he would like to do is take a lot of these tasks and find places within the career military and the civilian workforce. But he's talking about cuts to the civilian workforce too. So I think that within the military, there's a push to try and push as many of these tasks back into the uniformed military as
10% a year. That's significant. I need to take a short break here. We'll be right back on your turn.
Are you looking for a smarter, simpler way to save? Now you can get the benefits of paper savings bonds without the paper. It's easy to plan for your financial future with Treasury Direct, a secure, convenient, web-based system where you can purchase electronic savings bonds and other Treasury securities online 24/7. Build your savings by scheduling recurring purchases directly from your paycheck, checking, or savings account. Change how you save today. Visit treasurydirect.gov to open your free account.
When it comes to electronic medical records, everyone is trying to understand meaningful use. If you are a federal program manager and would like to explore this topic with your peers, come to a free January breakfast forum brought to you by Solutions Developers. Our speaker will be Dr. Harry Greenspun, Chief Medical Officer from Dell, located at AFE headquarters near the Courthouse Metro, and you'll be out by 9 a.m. Moderated by me, John Gilroy. For more details, call me at 703-674-2464.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Here's Tony Valletta, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for C3I, on the Why is Cybersecurity So Hard panel, sponsored by Unisys.
As you all know, we've been experiencing all different types of cybersecurity issues, as well as penetrations and attacks, ranging from individual things to websites to even penetrations of our power grid. I, for one, that have been working this for many years, am very concerned to make sure that things like our critical infrastructures of the United States do not get attacked and penetrated.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Unisys, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Unisys Identity Solutions provides citizens, employees, and travelers with the means to identify themselves assuredly, conveniently, and effectively in both physical and IT environments. The goal in every identification and credentialing engagement is to provide the highest level of identity assurance in the most convenient and effective manner. Unisys end-to-end solutions incorporate all aspects of identification and credentialing. Learn more about Unisys security offerings. Visit Unisys.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. We're in the home stretch here, and I want to thank, if I don't get a chance to before, to thank Andrew Tillman, Steve Watkins, and Steve Losey from the Federal Times for our inaugural show here, and we're going to make this a regular feature, and we'll have you guys or some of your colleagues on every week and get the roundup and some of the scoops, and maybe we can get you to scoop yourself here on the show. We've neglected the phones again, and if we'll go, do we have a caller? Caller, are you with us?
Yes, we do.
Yes, what's your question, please?
Mike, just not a question, just a comment on the increase in TRICARE costs. What's being forgotten in the debate is that the all-volunteer force veterans, i.e. the Vietnamese-era veterans, were promised free health care for life for them and their families if they committed to a career. And those are the people who are now the gray area retirees. So once The RENIG was originally on free health care for life after the volunteer force came along to institute the TRICARE, a low-cost option, and now they're looking again to increase the cost to those of us who were promised free health care for life.
Andrew, what about that?
Well, you know, the caller points out a real core underlying issue here, and that's the idea that the promises made to service members, either explicit or implicit, is different somehow than those that, you know, maybe General Motors made to, you know, automotive workers or something. Just the idea that these are people that are going into harm's way on behalf of the American people, and they, the idea of changing the agreement is really troubling for them and a lot of other people. So I don't know how many people of the Vietnam era would still be under the age of 65. There's probably some. That's not going to be a huge cross section, but there's definitely, under what Gates has discussed, a lot of people that will be affected. What we're going to see in the weeks to come is what he means by modest increases in those fees. I think that one person's idea of modest is different from another's.
Well, and with TRICARE, with health insurance, with the retirement, certainly a lot of people, both active and retired, civilian and military, say this is a breach of contract. This is, we were hired on with these promises to be made, and now they're talking about changing them.
Yeah, that's both the legal and political landscape that that Gates is up against, and I think that it's only going to be increase in terms of its the discussion of this as we go ahead, because these are massive costs and promises that have been made. And just given, as the secretary said last week, given the environment and the deficit, mm-hmm. You know, it's unclear which of those we can and which of those we will fulfill.
This is the era of all bets are off, isn't it?
I would say so. Yes.
How about combined federal campaign? You mentioned during the break, and it stunned me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Steve can talk more about it. He had our story, but basically, it looks like this is going to be the first year since 2002 where donations to the combined federal campaign from federal employees has actually fallen from the previous year, and I think that's a telling sign of the times.
Yeah, my conversations with a lot of people, for example, at the LA CFC, said that the pay freeze is one of the things that's playing a role in this. There are some people who are saying, you know, they've frozen my pay. I don't have and you know, my healthcare costs are going up. I don't have enough, you know, as much money as I had expected, so I'm going to scale back my my donations or just not donate at all. Some people even took back their donations after the pay freeze was announced. I mean, we're seeing the Washington area CFC, the biggest one, is about almost $12 million, or last week was $12 million short of the goal they had been hoping to raise.
So. Sign of the times. Jess, thanks for being here. We're going to be back here next week, and we'll keep doing this till we get it right. And thank you for coming in, and have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Don't be surprised by the latest changes to your commute. Get traffic and weather together every 10 minutes on the 8s on 103.5 FM, WTOP Radio. Now back on 107.7 FM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Federal Communications Commission is asking the public to weigh in on a plan that would expand the services offered by Travelers Information radio stations. Those stations now typically broadcast only traffic information, often near airports or major interchanges, and typically at the high end of the AM band. The FCC wants to expand what the stations can broadcast to possibly include weather reports, Amber Alerts, and public health warnings. The stations would also get a power boost under the new FCC proposal. Many of the stations operate on solar power or have battery backup power systems that enable them to continue to provide broadcast information to travelers regionally during significant power outages.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more. Who did the FAA select to develop its next-generation air traffic management system to manage 87,000 flights every day? ITT. ITT Defense has a single focus.